Coming up on the next BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast, sitting down with Berndt Haberlund, the designer of the iconic BMW rally suit. Take a listen.
In the first days, the rally suit was made for the reborn of the Paris-Dakar rally for Andrea Meyer. With her together, we discussed also the details. What do you need? And she told us it's very cold in the night and in the morning, so I need something. Goodness. And so they came out the rally suit with the Gore-Tex underneath.
Yeah.
So that she could take it off and make it very light and simple, this suit.
That was Berndt Haberlund at BMW Motorrad discussing the origin of the rally suit, arguably one of the most iconic motorcycle riding suits ever made. Hello, everyone. I'm Sean Thomas. Welcome back to the BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast. In our travels, my producer Louise Powers and I meet some very interesting people. We had a chance encounter with Berndt at an event in Las Vegas where he told us stories about what he does with BMW Motorrad. It was so interesting that we asked him to come on the show and share his stories with you. During this episode, Berndt talks about his history, his passions, and offers insight into what it takes to develop premium riding gear for motorcyclists. Please be sure to subscribe, like, and comment to this and other Ride and Talk episodes. We very much appreciate your continued support. Now let's take a listen to Berndt Haberlund at BMW Motorrad. So you came into Motorrad as an apparel designer at such an interesting time, because it seems to me that when you started...
End of the 90s?
The 90s. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of motorcycle apparel to be had at the time. I mean, it didn't seem like... Certainly not like now.
So it's a bit... I decided to go into this direction, to focus on motorcycle gear, because I had the feeling that the motorcycle gear market is... fashion-wise, really underdeveloped, I'd say. And I had the feeling here I can really change something, because this market is waiting for a bit nicer clothing.
Mm.
Was my enthusiastic feeling as a young fashion designer coming from school, of course, mixed with my idealism.
So you come to Motorrad as an idealist with these grand ideas of design. How much resistance did you meet here at the time when you were coming? Because this was a
absolutely none.
None.
Wow. I was really welcomed, and it was the first years were really exciting for me.
Yeah. And back, so in the 90s, I'm thinking about the gear that was first coming out. And I remember a lot of very bright colors from Motorrad. I remember of like bodysuits that were like solid yellow.
Yeah, you know? But this was exactly when I came. I changed it.
How long did it take from the moment that you got here to when your first piece came to the public?
2 years. Development cycle.
It's very quick.
And we changed quite fast all of the items. Yeah.
And at that time too, because the 90s was a fascinating time for BMW in general, because we started seeing really what we consider to be the modern BMW motorcycle was starting to come out. The K12 LT and the R1100S.
Right.
And these bikes and the gear. How closely were you working with the designers of the motorcycles then?
Very close, because this was an idea of Dave Robb in these years, the head of motorcycle design. We were a team. When I came into the motorcycle team, we were 10 people, not more. So I was... the 10th of the team who was responsible for the rider's gear. So this was the idea of Dave Robb to really integrate the rider's gear design into the team. It wasn't there before.
Interesting.
Before, the marketing people made it with agencies, this issue.
So you've got these great design ideas for motorcycle gear, but of course there are some things about motorcycle gear that must remain. So. Yeah. The restrictions, maybe we would call them, where the protectors go, for example.
Yeah.
How did you find it first? Was this an easy to understand this, or did you struggle with understanding this?
No, that's why I wanted to make exactly that, because it was really great stuff BMW made at these times. They already had the first Gore-Tex textile suit in the market. It was a great innovation.
What year was the first Gore-Tex suit?
Boy, it was about 92 or something.
Oh, wow.
But this already existed. The flip helmet existed, also a very big innovation in this market.
Yeah.
And then right before I came, they brought out the first denim motorcycle suit with protectors. Also, it is with a Kevlar yarn in the denim. You didn't see that it's not just denim, but it was really a very safe abrasion resistant suit, and this were invented before I came. Yeah. So there were really a need also by from the ones who were already there. They were on the path. I only had to dock in and bring the style with on the way. So for me, it was fascinating to see and to learn the ideals which were already here on board. And I could bring my understanding of how it should look so that the people can see that here's something new starting.
Now, in motorcycle gear, there's a very defined standard for abrasion resistance and impact resistance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, was that the case when you started in the 90s? Was there a defined idea?
There were a lot of ideas and innovations around, yes, but the chance to differentiate and or do something better was far easier in these days, because everyone tried something in this direction. In the UK, they tried to make really big and bulky protectors for make it better. Here at BMW, we always tried to make it more decent, but good working with more energy in the material that we don't have to make it so bulky than the perfect pattern or cut of the suit, that it's still comfortable, that it integrates better into the suit, the protection. So this was always the idea here at BMW to bring the safety and the comfort and in a perfect way together.
Mm.
That you don't see from far that this is a bulky armored, right?
Yeah,
exactly,
sure.
Exactly, yes.
The first time I came to this building that we're in now, it was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And the biggest shock that I had when I came here was how many motorcycles were parked out front. And then when I came in the building, how many bits of riding gear there were hanging on people's chairs. Yeah. And it wasn't new gear. It was old, beat up, you know, it was gear that had been ridden hard and long.
Yeah.
And it was still very good. And that really surprised me, because I didn't understand at the time that the people that worked here were so passionate about riding.
Yeah.
I just thought that this was a job and they did it, and maybe they rode and maybe they didn't. So, and then I've certainly now come to learn on the motorcycle side, it's very common for the people that work here to ride the bikes, to test the bikes, to give feedback. Is that also the case with gear? When you started and today, is it common for people around here to wear it and give feedback?
I would say even that it's been more these times.
Really?
Because we got a lot of people around which are not so close to the issue. So more indirect helpers, because we got a lot of stuff to solve here, which is about regulations and so on. So that we got some additional people around these hard kernel, I would say.
And this is interesting. We've done interviews on the motorcycle side before, where we've talked to designers, and they've mentioned some of the benefits of having people come in to design that don't ride, because they have ideas that we, as a rider, you may not have thought of.
Yeah.
Do you find that is the case here as well? Do you have people that are on the apparel side that aren't necessarily motorcycle riders that contribute in ways that are unique?
So, especially in the rider's gear design, I had two women. The one learned riding when she started with the rider's gear design, and the other one never. Before, she had made ski clothing, even if she never were on skis around. So she, and that's what you might ask me, she had the head free for ideas, right, which are not... she was more open-minded for having ideas which could work. Me myself, I can do a good rally suit, of course, yes, and this is could be perfect. But I always think in solutions, and I'm not searching that much than just a open-minded fashion designer who is not really riding. And a mixture of people in a team like that, yeah. This is quite important, I guess. Mm.
When you first started here, did you ride motorcycles as well?
Yeah, sure.
Can you tell us what you rode then? It doesn't matter. It's okay if it's not a BMW. I won't tell anybody.
When I started at BMW, I actually had a Yamaha.
Mm.
A three-cylindered Yamaha, a 750 XS.
How long until they made you switch to a BMW?
Of course. I had a contract for 3 months as a test contract, I'd say. I don't know how it's called in English. But the first week I went to the order office and ordered a GS Basic.
Like an R100?
The 800 GS
Basic. Oh, cool.
Because I knew this motorcycle will not exist for long anymore, because it was in 96, right. And it was the last year when they built it.
Sure.
So I immediately went there, and it went all through. And when I wanted to pick it up, they told me, oh, you got not the right to get a motorbike because you only got this test contract.
Oh, no.
And then he said, okay, now it's all through. And what should I do? Okay, you can get it. Because I got it, of course, quite cheap as an employee.
Sure.
And I didn't have the right to get it. But since this, I was very happy with this bike, and I sold it last year.
Whoa.
So I rode it really
for a long time.
25 years. And I only sold it to a very best friend that I know that it's in good hands, and I can see it from time to time. Yes.
What do you ride now?
90.
Yeah, the 90.
The 90 Roadster 9. Scrambler. Sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry.
The gray, not the aluminum, with the tank with the aluminum finishes actually has.
No, I got the series.
Yeah, I get you. Cool. I get that aluminum
tank.
And
I love that bike.
Yeah, the Scrambler is amazing. When you got a GS when you first got here, and do you remember what? I know that we're going to get into the rally suit because this is your baby. But was there anything before the rally suit that was sort of the suit that you maybe the first you designed you're the most proud of when you first started?
The rally suit actually was one of the first things we did in these times.
Wow.
But we also had in the first days, the rally suit was an extra suit to the collection. The Savannah suit and the Santiago suit were the premium enduro suits, and the rally suit came up as a simple suit beside. So a special but simple suit, not the top level. It was not the top level suit. It was made especially for the rally use, which it was really made for the reborn of the Paris-Dakar rally for Andrea Meyer. With her together, we discussed also the details. What do you need? And she told us it's very cold in the night and in the morning, so I need something. We put newspapers underneath for the first kilometers. Can we solve this in a better way? And so on.
Oh, my goodness.
And so there came out the rally suit with the Gore-Tex underneath jacket and pants, so that she could take it off and make it very light and simple, this suit. And this was the first suit. And the first, the most important aspect was the visibility from the helicopters, for example. That's why it was blue and white with these black and white stripes, really to see from far that you can recognize your drivers in the riders field.
That is fascinating.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to think of the rally suit as something that was sort of an experimental, you know, an exhibition suit, because it is now the icon. It's the suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so important.
Yeah. But this iconic stripe theme we had over several years the first years. But
with the other Savannah suits and what have you.
Yeah.
So, Andrea Meyer, and this is so fascinating too, that the rally suit was originally designed for the Dakar, which is an amazing race, and for a female rider.
Yeah.
And which is so interesting because it's only been recently that we've seen production rally suits available for women. But you have this competitor, and she was an amazing rider, and you're working closely with her to develop the suit. Yeah.
Yeah. For the first suit, we had 5 or 6 meetings here in BMW and talked about this and talked about the first prototypes and so on. She was really interested and enthusiastic to do that with us. This was really a really nice experience for me.
Yeah. And the photos of her competing, it's amazing because she's small and she's riding a monstrous motorcycle.
Yeah.
And she's got this amazing, this suit is so iconic. Of course, now, you know, we see the basic design of that suit even today in some of the designs. What's the rally suit that I just got?
The Adrar.
Adrar suit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We see see the black and white stripe with the bright red.
Exactly.
Very visible.
This comes exactly from these first inspirations. Yeah. We tried to make it again as a revival. So.
Yeah. And then the pocket on the wrist, the arm, left arm, which has carried its way to almost every rally suit that's been made since then. Can you tell us what that's for?
Yeah, the first rally suit had a pocket without the window. Mm-hmm. It was a window, but it was very small.
Tiny,
In the serial suit, it was very small. In the rally suit, it didn't exist because there was the card in, and every checkpoint they had to get this stamp, and that's why it didn't have this window, but this a bit smaller hole so that it doesn't fall off, but you can stamp it. This was just a rally necessity.
So, this was the alternative to having to stop at a checkpoint during the competition, find the card somewhere on your person.
Yes.
Now they just stick out with their wrist.
And the first rally suits also had these buttons here,
right?
These push buttons. This was, of course, the rest of the start number fixation. And in the back, we had this also, and we sold it in these years, in these first years as a pocket, which you could buy. You could put a number in, of course, or your name or something. Our colleague said, okay, this is for the backseat passenger. He can put the map inside.
Right.
Yeah.
So the passenger
this was a funny story
go.
In this first year.
So your passenger can be your navigator.
I remember
exactly,
that.
Yes.
Because when I was selling that suit back then, and we would tell people that you can snap it to the front, and then you can put your map in there, and you can pull it off of you and look at it, or snap up the bottom, which was entirely not what it was for.
Yeah.
We didn't know what it was for.
No, it was for nothing. It was just the first serial of the rally suit was a limited edition. So we didn't think that we can make a big business out of it. So that's why it was limited to 1,000 pieces or something.
Yeah.
And the next step was then we unlimited it, and then we brought the black version with the white stripes. And so
I'm pretty sure I still have a Rally 2 suit at home.
The Rally 2 was the most market influencing suit, because most of the enduro suits in the market are still exactly the concept of our second rally suit, with these pockets here, the pockets here, and this flaps for the ventilation,
the
proportions, the length is more or less still an existing must have in every motorcycle collection. This was the second rally suit.
You did an advertisement many years ago, and it was a picture of the Airflow suit. Mm-hmm. There's a rider in the Airflow suit, and he was standing next to an 1150 GS.
Yeah.
In his Airflow suit with a pair of sunglasses on, and his hair was all mussed up, and he had a parachute tucked under his arm.
Yeah.
And he had just finished skydiving in this suit. And I remember the first time I saw that, I said, that is going to be me. I'm going to do exactly that. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, the first Airflow suit was a very iconic suit as well.
Yeah.
It was the first suit which really showed the ventilation. So there were, in especially in US, there existed a lot of these very breathable net suits or jackets.
Yeah.
Quite low level pricing. But our suit had this... Dynatec material, which is quite
so robust
and so robust,
super
and had these six like the muscles on the chest,
a six pack.
A six pack. These holes with a net, also very rigid net material, and it was very iconic and was quite successful also.
I still have my Airflow suit from the early
2000s
as well. I still have it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's close as I'll ever get to having a six pack. Huh.
I have a later version of the Airflow suit, and it does not have a six pack.
No. So tell me a little bit about the fit of the suits, how they change when you go between categories. You know, we talked about the Airflow suit,
yeah,
which is a street suit. We have the rally suits, of course, is an adventure suit. We have touring suits like the...
Yeah.
And how does the fit change as you go from one category to another to another?
So the fit between the textile suits, the enduro suits, mm-hmm, are not too long, so that you got a good movement.
Yeah.
The touring suits can also be a bit longer, mm-hmm, but they are quite comfortable.
Yeah.
So our textile suits are always made that you can at least wear a sweaty underneath or a functional fleece jacket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some warm layers underneath.
One warm layer. Not too much, because we have to take care that the protectors are not moving too much, because they should stay where they have to stay.
Sure.
But the leather suits, for example, are always a bit closer to the body, the cut, because we don't count the layer in between. But it's also possible because leather is soft and gets softer with the time, so it's easier to wear them comfortable, also closer to the body.
Yeah.
The Furka suit, for example, is quite tight.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a problem for those ones who have not the standard measurements.
Sure.
But for everybody who fits in this suit, it's really fantastic, this suit. This is really amazing to wear this suit.
That leather is so soft and so beautiful. I love the feel of that suit.
And me too. Yep. But our suits normally are all quite comfortable.
Yeah.
Not too much bulky, because we have to take care that the protection works. But we try to cut all the suits comfortable and that you can move in them. Even for the customers who sometimes don't understand the difference between the suits.
Yeah.
So we have to stay on a line with the fit, because they want to compare the sizes and want to have, this is always a bit a challenge for us.
Mm. Of course, motorcycling has never been more popular than it is now.
It's correct, yes, especially on BMW motorcycles.
Mm. Mm. And it's only going to continue, I think, this trend. And I wonder, between now and when you started, we have so many more people. We also have people that vary in terms of size and shape of rider that is probably a broader aspect and ratio than before. And what kind of challenges do you face when you're trying to design a suit that will fit such a wide range of people? The rally suit is a great example. You know, the Rally GTX comes in short sizes, tall sizes, men's and women's. And this must be very challenging.
Yeah, it's quite challenging. But the more people we have as customers, the more people buy our stuff, the more sizes we can offer, of course. Because the sizes we don't offer because there's too few people who would buy them. And that's why it makes it easier if there are more customers.
Yeah, sure.
if sell more of them. And I wouldn't say that the people are more different than the first years, because we always had the small ones, the big ones, the tall ones, the the round ones and the slim ones.
Why'd you look at me when you said that?
Round
I didn't.
Round is a shape, Sean. You're in shape. Round is a shape.
I would say so, yes.
Now, materials fascinate me, because when we look at textiles, it seems that it's not difficult to get textiles that are extremely abrasion resistant, but it is difficult, it seems, to get very abrasion resistant materials that are also flexible, and you're not wearing something that's very big and bulky. Is this the case?
There are lots of materials which are quite bulky and really abrasion resistant. But we got, of course, some products which are abrasion resistant as a product as well, made from softer materials. But then you can be sure, because we have to fulfill the certification issue with the A, the double A and the triple A levels. So the construction of the suit is very important as well. And in these critical zones, like over the elbows, the shoulders and the hips and so on, we double materials also. Yeah. So that we don't make this garment completely hard and stiff, so that it's still good wearable.
Yeah.
Yeah, by doubling and choosing materials, different materials on the chest, for example, which is which has not to be so abrasion resistant as the hip, for example.
This is also a direction that BMW has gone that I haven't seen a lot of manufacturers go, and that is sizing the protectors based on the size of the suit.
Yeah.
This is, in premium suits, it's not uncommon to find manufacturers that make one protector size for everything.
Yeah, we got three sizes for the elbows, shoulders, knees.
Yep, and back
and back also.
And back. Yeah. Yeah, in back, yes. But in for the back, the most of the supply, motorcycle riders gear collections got different sizes, because the back is really, as you can see, it's one has a very long back, but the elbow, most of the competitors don't think about, because an elbow is an elbow and it's. Not that relevant, but it is, especially for comfort. So size 36 for women shouldn't have the same protector as you, for example, with your muscled arms.
Muscled arm.
You notice he didn't actually give me a sign.
Yeah.
You know.
How long have the current certification processes been in place? You know, for like rating a... something, a single A, double A, triple A, or how long has that been?
It's a good question. This testing method we got since a while, and even this rating is existing since a while, because the certification we do since a while, but it's not mandatory. You don't have to wear this clothing. So it came up in the communications of the riders gear brands since, 5 or 6 years, not earlier. So that the A levels is not so popular yet.
Yeah,
it came up really in the last years that the people wanted to know about and wanted to hear which level it is. Because in the early times, we had materials like Dynatec, Cordura, and so on. And the people asked for that. So we could explain, this is real Dynatec and you can trust. But since all of the companies are using lots of materials, this doesn't work anymore. So they ask for the certification levels. This is why it came up, I guess. It's existing since a while, but it wasn't that popular as it is right now.
It seems like the rating system for gear is relatively new, and I wonder how much will it change as time goes on and interests go on. Do you see a future where the rating system evolves and requires different attributes to be?
Yeah, so it will go forward always. Maybe in Europe, it will be include more aspects of safety, not only the abrasion resistance and the tear strength and the seam strength and so on. But I think especially worldwide, it will be there will come up more certification needs or maybe laws which make it mandatory or something. So the challenges will become more and more and will be heavier in the next years.
It seems like most of the world right now adopts the European standards. Is that what you find?
Up to now, most of the world accepts and ask for the CE certification, but more and more the other countries like China and Japan and also the US, other countries are asking for own and also different aspects for safety. The UK, for example, after the Brexit, right after the Brexit or 2 years after, they wanted to come up with their own standard. In the first time, they said, okay, we take the rules from the CE certification, but then with the years, we want to improve and improve. So we need our own mark for the certification, the UKCA, it was called. And it
How
didn't
did that work
come
out?
Like that. They gave it up again because it made too much work and it was not really necessary. But this was an idea. And I think in the future, there will come up a lot more countries with own ideas and own requirements and own rules. So our job in the future will be more and more to take care of the regulations and certifications and that stuff, because it's still personal protective gear.
And of course, all you want to do is just design really cool gear for people to ride motorcycles in. But it's good to be safe and you know, regulations have to be followed.
So, speaking of that, Berends, you know, you started as a designer here. You manage the development and suppliers. And I wonder, if, you know, Louise being an artist herself, I know that an artist must create art. In order to be happy. And I wonder, what do you do now to satisfy this in yourself?
I try to do my best in developing the stuff, the ideas of others. Of course, it's difficult for me, but it's still...
But there's something very, very nice about delivering other people's designs. The job that you do where you take that design and then you make it happen. Like you're the person who takes that design and goes to the supplier and says, I want to make this be how the designer wants and I want it to be effective and look good. Yeah. And so you get to deliver that. I think that that's probably very rewarding on its own.
Yes, of course. Yes. And it's still great fun to make rider's gear working and happening. And it's, The thing is, I designed 20 years the rider's gear and thought about every detail for the gear. So I think I'm really the right person to steer also the development at the suppliers now, because I can discuss every detail with them and also with the designers, which will work and which not, and so on. So it's something which I missed when I was designer on this side. So the job I can do now.
It's fascinating time too, because riding gear is getting more integrated with technology now. We're seeing some of the new suits having you know, lighting, for example, and the ability to interface with the bike in different ways and apps. And so there is a fascinating future coming, I think.
Yeah, there are a lot of ideas around, not only safety-wise, even comfort-wise. So the light, of course, is one thing which is safety, but it's also...
but it's also cool.
A feature, right? Yeah. It's also cool. And the airbag and the algorithm behind the airbag and the connectivity to the bike and so on are things. Yeah, and maybe we will have intelligent cooling systems and so on. We are thinking about a lot, especially because we have the possibility to connect it with the bike and control it via the bike controllers, which is for BMW very interesting, because we got possibilities which other riders gear suppliers don't have because they don't have the bikes which they can connect with it. And of course, this will we follow. And I hope that the acceptation of the customers will be there as well.
Yeah, it seems like there is an advantage for companies who do nothing but make gear because they focus on that. But there's a big advantage to a motorcycle manufacturer that makes motorcycle gear, because now it's all integrated and you work the gear with the bike.
Yeah.
And how much time do you spend looking at a design and working with the designer and then the supplier in figuring out how things work with the bike? So take the jackets that have the LED lighting. Now this connects to your Connected Ride app and it connects to your TFT. What kind of time did that take to be able to make that happen?
Yeah, also, so a standard process is 2 years long from the idea, what do we want to have in the collection or what do we need till we sell it.
Yeah.
It's standard is 2 years. If we want to have something more special or boots where we have to make tools and so on, it takes 2.5 at least. But we also got a process which is 3 years where we have to develop in advance some aspects of the suit that we can really start the real project. So then it becomes 3 years for special issues. And with this connected gear, we found out that we need even far more because we have to bring together so many people also inside BMW. But this will get better with the time because we will get used. We got a basis which we can set on. We will have the network inside BMW, the aspects. For the first connected product, we need, of course, more time because we have to bring the people together and so on.
Yeah, sure.
That's cool.
But I think in the future with the new ideas, it will be faster.
Bert, it was really good talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for you.
We very much hope you have enjoyed this episode. We want to hear from you, so please rate, comment, and share your thoughts about this podcast. We have many more episodes on the way, so please subscribe, follow along, and share your requests for future episodes of the BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast.